He was perhaps a trifle annoyed with Tom for seeming to make so light of what even Gandalf thought so perilously important. He waited for an opportunity when the talk was going again, and Tom was telling an absurd story about badgers and their queer ways. Then he slipped the ring on. Merry turned towards him to say something and gave a start, and checked an exclamation. Frodo was delighted, in a way. It was his own ring all right, for Merry was staring blankly at his chair, and obviously couldn't see him. He got up and crept quietly away from the fireside toward the outer door.
"Hey there!"
cried Tom, glancing towards him with a most seeing look in his shining eyes.
"Hey! Come, Frodo, there! Where be you a-going? Old Tom Bombadil's not as blind as that yet. Take off your golden ring. Your hand's more fair without it. Come back, leave your game, and sit down beside me. We must talk a while more, and think about the morning. Tom must teach the right road, and keep your feet from wandering."
Frodo laughed, trying to feel pleased, and taking off the ring, he came and sat down again. Tom now told them that he reckoned the sun would shine tomorrow, and that it would be a glad morning, and setting out would be hopeful. But they would do well to start early, for weather in that country was a thing that even Tom could not be sure of for long, and it would change sometimes quicker than he could change his jacket.
"I am no weather master," he said, "nor is aught that goes on two legs."
By his advice they decided to make nearly due north from his house, over the western and lower slopes of the Downs. They might hope in that way to strike the east road in a day's journey, and avoid the barrows. He told them not to be afraid, but to mind their own business.
"Keep to the green grass. Don't you go a-meddling with old stone or cold whites or prying in their houses, unless you be strong folk with hearts that never falter."
He said this more than once, and he advised them to pass barrows by on the west side if they chanced to stray near one. Then he taught them a rhyme to sing, if they should by ill luck fall into any danger or difficulty the next day.
"Ho, Tom Bombadil! Tom Bombadillo, by water, wood, and hill, by the reed and willow, by fire, sun, and moon, hark now and hear us. Come, Tom Bombadil, for our need is near us."
When they had sung this song all together after him, he clapped them each on the shoulder with a laugh, and taking candles, led them back to their bedroom. Chapter 8 Fog on the Barrow Downs. That night they heard no noises, but either in his dreams or out of them, he could not tell which, Frodo heard a sweet singing running in his mind, a song that seemed to come like a pale light behind a grey rain curtain, and growing stronger to turn the veil all to glass and silver, until at last it was rolled back, and a far green country opened before him under a swift sunrise. The vision melted into waking, and there was Tom whistling like a tree full of birds, and the sun was already slanting down the hill and through the open window. Outside everything was green and pale gold. After breakfast, which they again ate alone, they made ready to say farewell, as nearly heavy of heart as was possible on such a morning. Cool, bright, and clean under a washed autumn sky of thin blue. The air came fresh from the northwest. Their quiet ponies were almost frisky, sniffing and moving restlessly. Tom came out of the house and waved his hat and danced upon the doorstep, bidding the hobbits to get up and be off and go with good speed. They rode off along a path that wound away from behind the house, and went slanting up towards the north end of the hill brow under which it sheltered. They had just dismounted to leave their ponies up the last steep slope, when suddenly Frodo stopped.
"Goldberry," he cried, "my fair lady, clad all in silver green, we have never said farewell to her, nor seen her since the evening."
He was so distressed that he turned back, but at that moment a clear call came rippling down. There on the hill brow she stood beckoning to them. Her hair was flying loose, and as it caught the sun it shone and shimmered. A light like the glint of water on dewy grass flashed from under her feet as she danced. They hastened up the last slope and stood breathless beside her. They bowed, but with a wave of her arm she bade them look round, and they looked out from the hilltops over lands under the misty morning. It was now as clear and far seen as it had been veiled and misty when they stood upon the knoll in the forest, which could now be seen rising pale and green out of the dark trees in the west. In that direction the land rose in wooded ridges, green, yellow, russet under the sun, beyond which lay hidden the valley of the Brandywine. To the south, over the line of the Withywindle, there was a distant glint like pale glass where the Brandywine River made a great loop in the lowlands and flowed away out of the knowledge of the hobbits. Northward, beyond the dwindling downs, the land ran away in flats and swellings of grey and green and pale earth colours, until it faded into a featureless and shadowy distance. Eastward the Barrow Downs rose, ridge behind ridge into the morning, and vanished out of eyesight into a guess. It was no more than a guess of blue and a remote white glimmer blending with the hem of the sky, but it spoke to them out of memory and old tales of the high and distant mountains. They took a deep draught of the air, and felt that a skip and a few stout strides would bear them whatever they wished. It seemed faint-hearted to go jogging aside over the crumpled skirts of the downs toward the road, when they should be leaping, as lusty as Tom, over the stepping-stones of the hills straight towards the mountains. Goldberry spoke to them, and recalled their eyes and thoughts. "Speed now, fair guests," she said, "and hold to your purpose. North with the wind in the left eye, and a blessing on your footsteps. Make haste while the sun shines." And to Frodo she said, "Farewell, elf friend. It was a merry meeting." But Frodo found no words to answer. He bowed low, and mounted his pony, and followed by his friends, jogged slowly down the gentle slope behind the hill. Tom Bombadil's house and the valley and the forest were lost to view. The air grew warmer between the green walls of hillside and hillside, and the scent of turf rose strong and sweet as they breathed. Turning back, when they reached the bottom of the green hollow, they saw Goldberry, now small and slender like a sunlit flower against the sky. She was standing still, watching them, and her hands were stretched out towards them. As they looked, she gave a clear call, and lifting up her hand, she turned and vanished behind the hill. Their way wound along the floor of the hollow, and round the green feet of a steep hill, into another deeper and broader valley, and then over the shoulder of further hills, and down their long limbs, and up their smooth sides again, up on to new hilltops, and down into new valleys. There was no tree, nor any visible water. It was a country of grass and short springy turf, silent except for the whisper of the air over the edges of the land, and high lonely cries of strange birds. As they journeyed, the sun mounted and grew hot. Each time they climbed a ridge, the breeze seemed to have grown less. When they caught a glimpse of the country westward, the distant forest seemed to be smoking, as if the fallen rain was steaming up again from leaf and root and mould. A shadow now lay round the edge of sight, a dark haze above which the upper sky was like a blue cap, hot and heavy. About midday they came to a hill whose top was wide and flattened, like a shallow saucer with a green, mounded rim. Inside there was no air stirring, and the sky seemed near their heads. They rode across and looked northwards. Then their hearts rose, for it seemed plain that they had come further already than they had expected. Certainly the distances had now all become hazy and deceptive, but there could be no doubt that the downs were coming to an end. A long valley lay below them, winding away northwards, until it came to an opening between two steep shoulders. Beyond, there seemed to be no more hills. Due north, they faintly glimpsed a long, dark line. "That is a line of trees," said Mary, "and that must mark the road. All along it, for many leagues east of the bridge, there are trees growing. Some say they were planted in the old days." "Splendid," said Frodo. "If we have as good going this afternoon as we have done this morning, we shall have left the downs before the sun sets and be jogging on in search of a camping place." But even as he spoke, he turned his glance eastwards, and he saw that on that side the hills were higher and looked down upon them, and all those hills were crowned with green mounds, and on some were standing stones, pointing upwards like jagged teeth out of green gums. That view was somehow disquieting, so they turned from the sight and went down into the hollow circle. In the midst of it there stood a single stone, standing tall under the sun above, and at this hour casting no shadow. It was shapeless and yet significant, like a landmark or a guarding finger, or more like a warning. But they were now hungry, and the sun was still at the fearless noon, so they set their backs against the east side of the stone. It was cool, as if the sun had had no power to warm it, but at that time this seemed pleasant. There they took food and drink, and made as good a noon meal under the open sky as anyone could wish, for the food came from down under hill. Tom had provided them with plenty for the comfort of the day. The ponies, unburdened, strayed upon the grass. Riding over the hills, and eating their fill, the warm sun and the scent of turf, lying a little too long, stretching out their legs and looking at the sky above their noses, these things are, perhaps, enough to explain what happened. However that may be, they woke suddenly and uncomfortably from a sleep they had never meant to take. The standing stone was cold, and it cast a long pale shadow that stretched eastward over them. The sun, a pale and watery yellow, was gleaming through the mist just above the west wall of the hollow in which they lay. North, south, and east, beyond the wall, the fog was thick, cold, and white. The air was silent, heavy and chill. Their ponies were standing crowded together with their heads down. The hobbits sprang to their feet in alarm and ran to the western rim. They found that they were upon an island in the fog. Even as they looked out in dismay towards the setting sun, it sank before their eyes into a white sea, and a cold grey shadow sprang up in the east behind. The fog rolled up to the walls and rose above them, and as it mounted it bent over their heads until it became a roof. They were shut in a hall of mist whose central pillar was a standing stone. They felt as if a trap was closing about them, but they did not quite lose heart. They still remembered the hopeful view they had had of the line of the road ahead, and they still knew in which direction it lay. In any case, they now had so great a dislike for that hollow place about the stone that no thought of remaining there was in their minds. They packed up as quickly as their chilled fingers would work. Soon they were leading their ponies in single file over the rim and down the long northward slope of the hill, down into a foggy sea. As they went down, the mist became colder and damper, and their hair hung lank and dripping on their foreheads. When they reached the bottom, it was so cold that they halted and got out cloaks and hoods, which soon became bedewed with grey drops. Then, mounting their ponies, they went slowly on again, feeling their way by the rise and fall of the ground. They were steering, as well as they could guess, for the gate-like opening at the far northward end of the long valley which they had seen in the morning. Once they were through the gap, they had only to keep on in anything like a straight line, and they were bound in the end to strike the road. Their thoughts did not go beyond that, except for a vague hope that perhaps away beyond the downs there might be no fog.